here in pieces, and you're having to lose the Scrambia!
It's a dark time for the Podosphere. Marshal Latham, striking from a hidden base, has won his first victory since forming the Journey Into podcast. During the battle, he managed to steal Rish Outfield away from the Doomsteef podcast, forming an alliance between them based on their love for Star Wars. Pursued by the Empire's sinister agents, Marshal and Rish believe they have something interesting to say about the decades-old franchise, its characters, the players behind the scenes, and the new adventures to come. Clearly, they must be suffering from delusions of grandeur.
I'm out of it for a little while. Everybody gets delusions of grandeur.
Greetings, exalted ones. Welcome to our inaugural episode of the Delusions of Grandeur podcast. I am your host for this episode, Marshal Latham.
No, I am your host for this episode, Rish Outfield.
Ah, we'll have to lightsaber duel over that one. So this podcast is going to be dedicated to Star Wars. We're going to try to do it monthly and try to have a guest on each week. Star Wars is something that has meant a lot to both Rish and I, and we decided we enjoyed talking about it enough to do it on a regular basis. So for this first episode, we have Dave Thompson, the co-editor of Podcastle, here to talk about his experience with Star Wars. Welcome, Dave.
Hey, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me. It's exciting to be here. I love Star Wars, too.
Let's go ahead and start with kind of with your Star Wars conversion story, Dave, and tell us your experience with Star Wars, when you first saw it, what your first impressions were, and go for it.
Okay. So I was born in 77, a few months after the original movie came out. And the original movie was the last movie my parents saw before I was born. And then the next movie that they saw after I was born was The Empire Strikes Back. And I was 3 years old when it came out. And they decided to take me to see The Empire Strikes Back, which is, looking back on it and having my own kids, it's kind of crazy that that was the first movie I ever saw, but I guess it explains a lot. But it's a pretty dark movie, but I guess I was literally just talking with my parents about it this past weekend. And like, you know, how did I react to it? Was I terrified? Did I love it? I knew I must have liked it because everything was Star Wars when I was growing up. But they said I was just completely enthralled the whole time through. I just sat there as a kid, loved every second of it. And I guess my parents took me to see it four times in the movie theater as a Wow. 3-year-old. And I don't remember any of that, but I remember, you know, playing with the toys and everything after that, having the lightsaber duels with my dad. But that was the first Star Wars movie that I saw. And then 3 years later, I saw Jedi. I do remember waiting in line to see Jedi and having like the little picture book there and everything and totally digging on it. But Empire was the first movie for me and still probably my favorite out of all of them.
And so in the interim, did you see the Star Wars then?
Oh, yeah. I saw, you know, I can't remember exactly. I must have seen Star Wars before I saw Jedi. And that was when, you know, VCRs were still a relatively new thing. And we had a birthday party. I had a slumber party for like my 5th birthday or something, I think. And we watched Star Wars and we rented a VCR and rented a VHS tape and stayed up late, you know, till like 8:30 or something and watched Star Wars. And we got into kind of a lot of trouble, I remember, because we were watching the cantina scene and me and all my friends, you know, a bunch of 5-year-old boys just were laughing hysterically as each alien came up. And I think my parents put up with a lot. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. We loved it.
Dave, it sounds to me like your parents must have really liked those movies too. three times, four times for a little boy.
Yeah, my dad is a big science fiction fan. He loves Star Wars. He loves Star Trek. He read Captain America comic books when he was in high school and college, I think. And my mom, I guess, kind of went along with it for a little while, although after Spock died in Star Trek, she was done with Star Trek at that point. But Star Wars, she always loved, I think, because of the personal connection that it had for us as a little family. They love it. They dig it.
Yeah, so it's their fault that you were going crazy on your fifth birthday party then.
It's all their fault. Yeah, no doubt about it.
That's awesome. Yeah, I always like to hear, how people grew up with Star Wars. And I guess the other question I would have, hopefully this doesn't run into our selected topic for this episode, but I guess what was the thing that really stuck out to you when you first saw Empire? I mean, what part of it just made you think, wow, I love this thing?
I honestly can't actually remember seeing Empire. I don't know why. I mean, I was three. And it's kind of amazing what my kids still remember when they were three. But I remember something that did stick out was toward the end when Luke flies off to go rescue his friends. And Obi-Wan says, that boy's our last hope. And Yoda says, no, there is another. I mean, now we all know who the other was. And it seems pretty obvious in hindsight. But at that point, my parents and me and my brother came up with this idea that the other was Luke Skywalker's brother named Mark. I guess after Mark Hamill. So I remember that being like really intriguing. Who is this other Jedi who we don't know?
Marshall, who was the other for you, man?
You know, I really didn't know. I didn't put the Leia thing together. I guess I should have, toward the end of the movie when he calls out to her, but I didn't realize that until Jedi came out. I don't remember thinking about that too much. Who was the other? I was more into defending that Darth Vader was definitely not Luke's father.
Right. Yeah, right. That couldn't be. That was so horrifying.
It's impossible.
I'm kind of already getting us off topic a little bit here, but I have two kids I have three kids now, but one is 8 and one is 4 and the other's just a baby. And the 8-year-old and the 4-year-old don't know the twist yet. They haven't seen the movies because they're kind of sensitive about darker stuff, but they have no idea. I've worked so hard to keep like that bit of storytelling sacred for them. Hopefully it doesn't get blown, but I think the time is high to show them the movies.
Marshall, was that one of, I know I'm over analyzing it or making it a bigger deal than it is, but was that one of your goals when you had kids? Is I can't wait to be able to sit my kids down and watch this with them.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Yeah. I wanted them to share that experience. And I don't know if they're totally into it. I mean, they love it and we talk about it all the time. I don't know if they have the same childhood appreciation that I had for it. But that was definitely one of the highlights of being a parent, was to sit down and watch those shows with them. Well, all right, well, let's move on to our topic of today. And it's kind of an extension of Rish and my discussion that we had on my side podcast, Strewn Along the Path. We decided to talk about the moments in each movie that we liked the best or that really moved us the most for that movie. And so we invited Dave along here to share his moments as well. So let's start out with episode 1, Phantom Menace. I think we'll let Dave go ahead and...
I have the honor of the Phantom Menace.
Of the Phantom Menace.
Well, I mean,
there's got to be one, right?
Well, so when The Phantom Menace came out, like, we were all jazzed about a new Star Wars movie finally coming out. And I had friends who waited in line down at Man's Chinese Theater to go see it. We were in college, and they waited there for, like, weeks, and had people substitute to go stand in line with them and whatnot while they were taking classes. So, yeah, we were all jazzed about The Phantom Menace when it came out. And did you guys have this experience too, where you convinced yourselves how awesome it was for a little while? Or was that just me?
No, I totally bought into it.
Yeah.
There was a camera crew from the news outside the theater for the first showing, which of course I went to. And I was one of those guys they interviewed coming out. And I didn't know how I felt. It was too big. Yeah. You know what I mean? There were too many moments and too many questions and things that were new for the first time in how long had it been? 16 years. We had a new Star Wars film. And so I just went, it was great. It wasn't until later that people started to tell me, you know what? This was absolutely terrible about the movie. Or you know what I hated about the movie? Or what was up with this? And it started to chip at my resolve. And I started to think, you know, that's right. That, you know, I still like the movie, though. And by the 10th or 12th conversation like that with somebody who hated it, I came to terms with, you know, it's probably not as good as the original trilogy. And then when episode 2 came out, that period of really loving it was way shorter. And when episode 3 came out, there was no period of really loving it for me.
No period, Marshall, at all for episode 3.
No, no. I walked out going, oh man, this one wasn't, was this one worse than the others? And the guys I saw it with said, no, this was just right up there. Marshall?
I really enjoyed Revenge of the Sith more than the other two. But when I first watched Phantom Menace, I totally loved it, loved everything about it. Maybe was a little annoyed with the Gungan fight at the end with the robot. I thought the robots were cool, but the Gungans I never really got into. I guess my resolve has chipped away over time as well, but there's still moments of the movie that I really like.
Totally. The lightsaber fight at the end was still really emotional and exciting and everything. Even like the last time I watched it, it was pretty good.
So was that your moment then?
I think so. I think so. And actually, one of the dudes that we got to meet at Man's Chinese Theater who came out to the line was Ray Park. And he, like, you know, Darth Maul. And so he was doing some lightsaber moves and taking pictures of people. And that was pretty sweet. But yeah, I think the lightsaber fight at the end was like, this is, you know, this is what this movie's been building toward. And yay. So I liked it quite a bit.
Yeah, I think the moment for me, it was during the lightsaber battle. But Qui-Gon being killed wasn't, I mean, yeah, that was a big moment. But the part that really got me was having Obi-Wan on the other side of the laser thing. And just, you know, they showed shots of him and then shots of Darth Maul. And just that anticipation for as soon as that thing opens, Obi-Wan is going after him and he's on his own. And the emotions that he was going through, that moment for me is pretty killer.
Yeah.
I would pick the same thing. I mean, I really loved that lightsaber fight. And all, I think it's the best of all three prequel lightsaber fights. For my runner-up, though, there's this moment at the very beginning of the movie where one of the Nemoidians turns his head and he's got this thing over his face and he goes, they've got into the ventilation shaft. And I've never seen the movie and not laughed. When it does that, I don't know why. I don't know what that thing is on its face or why it's talking that way, but that amuses me.
Sir, they've gone up the ventilation shaft.
It's funny because that sounds like a very Rish Outfield voice that he says it in too, you know? I mean, that could have been you in that movie. Maybe it was.
I think that was my Hervé Villechaize impression, but
I think we need to do an episode 1
God.
Voiceover or
starring Rish Outfield. He could do the whole thing. It would be so amazing. I would totally pay to hear that.
I did like the pod race as well.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
Well, one thing that I noticed the last time I watched Phantom Menace, and this was well into the all the prequels suck era for me, was how well directed that pod race scene was.
Yeah.
Because we're in an era of, you know, shaky cam and MTV editing and quick cuts and confusion. But for the 11 minutes or however long that pod race goes, you always know which one is Anakin, which one is Sebulba, which one is action figure number 4. The way that that is staged and shot is just excellently done. I know Lucas has some shortcomings, but putting together action sequences and shooting action is definitely not one of them.
See, I totally agree with you on the pod racing. Like, that was an amazing piece. But then when you get to, like, the scene at the end, when they're cutting between the lightsaber fight and the Gungan fight, and then the stupid space battle at the end.
I'll try spinning. That's a good trick.
The space battle felt like such a last, you know, like so phoned in, I guess, for Lucas, especially after how awesome that pod racing was. I mean, if we were going to compare like Star Wars dogfights, say, I think I'd agree with you, Rich, like that lightsaber fight's at the top of the prequels. But as far as the dogfights go in the whole movie, that one was just a bummer for me. It felt like the little girl in the second Jurassic Park movie doing gymnastics and kicking the raptor in the head. Like, that's kind of what...
That's a low blow.
Yeah, that's kind of what it felt like. Like, this is not at all. That part, I think I knew when I saw it, that was not as exciting as the other stuff that we'd seen. But I'm totally with you on the pod racing. The pod racing was incredibly done.
All right, we need to move on to episode 2 now, and
it's gonna take a while.
Hey, so Rish, let you go first on episode 2. What was your moment for that?
Yeah, you and I had a podcast. Well, it was your podcast called Strewn Along the Path that inspired this one, and in that podcast, I was your special guest. And yeah, that's the moment I fixated on in episode 2 was the moment after Anakin has killed the sand people. And he says, I hate them. They're like animals. And I slaughtered them like animals. And the camera slowly pulls in. And he says, and not just the men. And there's this look on his face of almost pride in what he's done. And he says, but the women and the children.
I killed them all. They're dead. Every single one of them. And not just the men, but the women and the children too. They're like animals, and I slaughtered them like animals. I hate them.
And you can hear that Darth Vader theme coming in, or it might be even the Emperor theme. But I've always just thought, wow, he can act. Look at that. I don't know why Padme wouldn't just head for the hills after seeing that moment, but.
Right, like run away at that point, yeah.
But I think that he has embraced his anger and his hatred and has been powerful for the first time in his life. Because, you know, he was a slave and he was a little boy, and then suddenly he's an apprentice. And apparently Obi-Wan cannot be pleased no matter what Anakin does. But suddenly this guy is a man. And instantly, you know, he regrets having said that and he regrets having killed them all and all that. But I think that to somebody who really liked the prequels, they could point to that and say, there you go. That's when he knows that giving in to your anger actually does make you powerful.
Mm. Yeah.
His first step on a darker path. All right, Dave, go ahead for your part there.
So my favorite part in Clones, I think, would have to be pretty much everything with Obi-Wan Kenobi, but specifically the encounter with Jango Fett on the platform, right when Jango's taking off. And, you know, Obi-Wan tries to catch him, and there's this, in my opinion, a really exciting scene between a Jedi and a non-Jedi.
Get on board!
Obi-Wan thinks he has the upper hand, and then he realizes, like, oh no, and he falls over the edge with Jango, and that was just a killer scene for me. I love that scene. All the Obi-Wan Kenobi detective bits, I could watch a whole nother movie of that with Ewan McGregor.
Yeah, that's what the movie should have been. I guess for me, and I don't know if this is so much an emotional point, but I thought it was just brilliant to me in sound editing and special effects. But right after that, Obi-Wan follows Jango Fett to the planet, going through the asteroid field and the battle there. But that moment when he sends the sonic charge and there's just no sound at all for over a second.
Seismic charges. Stand by.
And then the brrrr, you know, just that whole Ben Burtt. I've always been impressed with his sound editing, but I thought that was a kind of a brave choice. It totally worked for me.
There's no John Williams score either during that whole part, right? I remember that being quiet and pretty intense.
Yeah, there was no sound at all at first when that charge goes off. And it happens a couple times, but that first time I was pretty impressed. But I think for space battles, you know, that was pretty cool too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, going through the asteroid and Jango shooting at him and things like that. But you know, that is more of an action oriented thing. But really, you know, when you're talking about episode two, there's not a lot to pick from. So I guess the only other thing I could say about that is I really liked that Padme was shown in a stronger role in that movie. You know, when Anakin says he has to go, she's like, well, I'm going with you.
Yeah, and she fights at the end, right? I mean, that's important. I agree. And I mean, I, you know, there are other parts of Attack that I like, but not to belabor us here. Sorry.
So I think I'll go first on episode three. I thought that was the best prequel. I didn't like everything about it, but most of the movie I was pretty enthralled. The relationship that I really enjoyed watching was between Anakin and Palpatine. Even though most of that was off screen, the parts that we did see, you know, I just really enjoy watching Palpatine dig his claws into Anakin's psyche and pull it in. And there's the moment when they're at the opera or whatever, and they're talking, you know, he's saying, telling him that there was a Sith Lord that overcame death. And
the dark side of the Force is a pathway to many abilities some consider to be unnatural.
But that whole conversation is really subtle and really pulling at Anakin. And then the last line there.
Is it possible to learn this power?
Not from a Jedi.
Yeah, that just sent chills down my spine. I love that part every time.
Well, I'll go next just because I agree with you. That's my favorite moment in that third film. And I saw it at the Grauman's Chinese. Yeah, that moment was unlike anything that we had because it's just dialogue. It's just two actors talking. And yeah, there's special effects in the background. But it was the first time that you really got to see Ian McDiarmid go to town. It showed some kind of restraint, too, I think, on Lucas's part. Because it's probably a 4-minute scene. I don't know, for some reason, you got to see him, like you said, casting a spell, weaving a web, but with words.
Go ahead.
Oh, that's okay. You go first.
Well, as I've said before, I just wish we could have seen more of that. If they were going to focus on Anakin, I wish we could have seen more of his journey to the dark side and that influence that Palpatine had on him.
Yeah, it was kind of a shame. So I think I agree, and that I think Sith is probably my favorite of the prequels, and there's a lot that I like about it, even though there's a lot that I don't like about it. Like, I love the space battle at the beginning. I thought that was incredible, and I love the confrontation between Anakin and Obi-Wan at the end. But I think my favorite part of that movie is not very long after what you guys are talking about, right when Mace Windu, Samuel L. Jackson, tells him to go get Palpatine. And there's this, speaking of restraint, and there's not really any dialogue in this scene, but there's a couple scenes of Anakin. You can tell he's struggling. He's looking out at Coruscant and looking out at the sunset, and he's struggling, you know, trying to figure out whether or not, oh, he's told to stay back while Mace Windu goes and apprehends him, I think. Is that right? Do I have that right?
Yeah, that's correct. Mace says, okay, you stay here.
And so he's staying there, and you can tell he's struggling with that decision. And then you cut away to Padme somewhere else, and there's this just great moment of tension. And, man, you know it's going to get so screwed up. You know that he can't do it, and everything's going to go to hell really quickly. And I love that. That was the most restrained that I think Lucas was in those three movies, and I absolutely loved it. I thought that was great. There was so much tension there and so much that wasn't said, which is maybe the other reason that I like it so much. There was no corny dialogue or anything, but I love that bit.
Yeah, and I think John Williams sells that moment as well. I mean, the music right there is pretty powerful too.
Yeah, it's haunting.
All right. I was just going to say, is there any one little tidbit you want to say about the prequels before we move on?
I don't love the prequels, but I've come to be like, yeah, they're okay. You know, I don't mind watching them like I used to. If they're on now and I see them, I'm like, oh, okay. You know, it's not a great movie, but there's only so many Star Wars movies. And I think I'll always love that blend of science fiction and fantasy.
Let's go to the first movie ever of Star Wars. I think we're at Rish going for, no, we're at Dave going first now.
Well, my favorite moment of Star Wars, that movie, is the Han shoots first in the cantina scene.
Even I get bored at sometimes. You think I had a choice? Over my dead body. Yes, I bet you have. Sorry about the mess.
From that all the way to them blasting out of Mos Eisley.
Stop that ship! Blast them!
Chewie, get us out of here!
That was just incredible to me. And it's funny, you know, we probably don't have time to talk about this, but like, if you look at the movies when you saw them when you were younger, and then when you saw them now, and how maybe your favorite parts have changed, that wouldn't have been my favorite part 20 years ago. But now that's like as rollicking as those movies. Well, no, I mean, it just keeps getting rollicking. But that first movie, it really gets going right there for me. And it never really stops at that point. It's just always rolling after that. And I love that.
Dave, what would your favorite moment have been 20 years ago or 30 years ago?
Probably Luke Skywalker flying down the trench when I was, you know, as a kid, Luke was my favorite. And then as a grown up, everything with Han Solo became a lot more fun to watch for me. And so I think Luke flying down the trench, blowing up the Death Star, that's an incredibly iconic moment right there. And Han Solo flies in to help him out, and it's just masterfully done.
You're all clear, kid. Now let's blow this thing and go home.
I wish I had gone before you, because my favorite scene is Luke in the Death Star trench, where that music is just ramping up and up and up and up. And then suddenly Obi-Wan says, use the Force, Luke. And the music changes totally to this dreamy, slow, almost, you know, like relaxing kind of music as he turns off the computer. And yeah, I mean, you guys know what happens. Spoilers.
Use the Force, Luke. Let go, Luke.
The Force is strong in this one.
Luke, trust me. stop your targeting computer. What's wrong?
Nothing. I'm all right.
But as I've gotten older, there's this moment that I go to again and again and again. And it's in the middle of the movie where our heroes are in the trash compactor and they're all cheering. And 3PO says, listen to them. They're dying, R2. Curse my metal body. I wasn't fast enough. And I laugh every time I see that. But I also, I want to weep. I don't know why. There's such a human moment for 3PO. And I mean, he thinks he's failed and he's not a robot. I guess that's what I said the last time I talked to you, Marshall, is he's a human being that, you know, that looks like a robot.
Hey, listen to them. They're dying, R2. Curse my metal body. I wasn't fast enough. It's all my fault. My poor master.
We're all right. You did great.
For some reason, that just makes me love 3PO so much, that berating himself for letting them die moment.
That's very good. I love that part. The thing I remember most, and I don't know if it's my favorite scene because there's so many good scenes from Star Wars, but the thing that impacted me the most, I think, when I first watched it in the theater was the part when Luke... They're on the Millennium Falcon. They've already left Tatooine. And Luke is getting his first training with the remote and the lightsaber. And, you know, up until that point, you know, we've heard about the Jedi Knights. We've seen the lightsaber. We've heard Obi-Wan talk about things. But as we enter that scene, I believe, is right after Alderaan has been destroyed. And,
right.
And Ben... starts, you know, just, oh, you know, he feels something is wrong in the Force.
Are you all right? What's wrong?
I felt a great disturbance in the Force, as if millions of voices suddenly cried out in terror and were suddenly silenced. I fear something terrible has happened.
At that point, I got that there was something to this Force. It was a spiritual type thing, you know, just that moment, and then training Luke on the remote and having him put the blast shield on, and he can't see and he feels the Force for the first time. And Han's over there in the corner, you know, making fun of it all.
Remember, a Jedi can feel the Force flowing through him.
You mean it controls your actions?
Partially, but it also obeys your commands.
Pokey religions and ancient weapons are no match for a good blaster, Drusak.
I love that scene. It just kind of sets up the whole dynamic of what Star Wars is all about. You know, you got blasters, you got lightsabers, you got the Force. You know, it's all right there.
I think. And like, what good character moments, like for every character right there in that little scene. You know exactly who they are and how different they are from each other. That was a killer scene.
I mean, for Star Wars and Empire, it was really hard for me to come up with one thing that I liked the most. Well, let's move on to Empire Strikes Back. And Rish, you get to go first on this.
Okay, well, we're all going to say the same thing. So,
I don't know. I'm curious to see what everybody says.
Oh, okay. Well, the last half hour of that movie is just solid. There's not a weak moment in that. But
yeah,
the revelation, the scene where Vader beats Luke and then just starts talking, is so amazing, and the music is great. You can just listen to that score by itself, and you know exactly what Vader's saying just by listening to what John Williams does. But yeah, that pause where he says, no, I, you know, that, oh my gosh, man.
If you only knew the power of the dark side, Obi-Wan never told you what happened to your father.
He told me enough. He told me you killed him.
No, I am your father.
Holy cow, my arm hairs are sticking up, and here it is 30 years since I've seen it. I mean, sorry, the first time. It's been less time since I saw it the last time. And sometimes I'm so jealous of people like you, Marshall, that got to see that. And I guess you too, Dave, but you can't remember, so it never happened.
I can't. I mean, I have no memory of that that revelation. It's incredible though. Like, you know, I remember, and maybe you're the same way, Rish, but I remember like watching it over and over and over again, and every time it'd just be like, oh, like no, it can't be true, you know, just like crying like Luke, you know, it's impossible. Yeah, I'm with you, man. That is, you're probably right. That is the definitive moment of Star Wars in general.
Well, what would be your runner up then, Dave?
You know, Rish says the last half hour is just unbeatable, and I agree with him, but the whole movie is just incredible. It's hard to, it's such a great movie, and I don't think I could ever get tired of watching any of it. But I think maybe my favorite part, aside from what Rish said, is the scene in the asteroid field. That scene just, you know, it's been done so many times since then, something similar. But that scene still just seems to be like an incredibly ballsy scene for Han Solo.
You're not actually going into an asteroid field.
They'd be crazy to follow us, wouldn't they?
You don't have to do this to impress me.
Sir, the possibility of successfully navigating an asteroid field is approximately 3,720 to 1.
Never tell me the odds.
I love that. I love him just like going in there, flying against the current, basically. Things are smashing his ship. Things are smashing the TIE fighters. And, you know, he just keeps going because he knows he can. My other runner up, because I said my kids, they're a little too sensitive to watch the movies, but they love to hear me talk about them and they like to listen to the music. And so I've kind of narrated some of the movie to them. And my son just absolutely loves hearing the part at the beginning where Luke gets attacked by the Wampa and is hanging upside down in the cave and pulls the lightsaber to him with the Force and uses it to cut himself free and then, you know, cut off the Wampa's arm. That was just, that's just a killer scene too. Like I said, the whole movie I think is just incredible, but those are my favorite bits, I think.
Well, and I'm pretty sure we would all agree that would be our favorite movie if we put all the Star Wars movies in order of what's the best. I mean, I think we'd all agree that's the movie right there. But yeah, you know, that Wampa scene, the reason that's so cool, I mean, that's the first time other than the Death Star that we actually see Luke using the Force. Well, my favorite part, I mean, yeah, I tried to come up with something other than the I am your father part because I knew that would be coming up. The other part is when Luke gets to Bespin and he's led through the corridors where, you know, he has a little fight there with some stormtroopers, but then he's led to the carbonite chamber or whatever. That first moment when he's walking through there and then you hear the breathing and Darth Vader steps out for the first time and you know that, you know, Luke is actually going to battle Darth Vader. I mean, the excitement of that is pretty incredible.
The Force is with you, young Skywalker. But you are not a Jedi yet.
Darth Vader is the ultimate enemy, and here's Luke, who's barely been trained. A lot of anticipation there, I guess.
And then he loses, right? I mean,
yeah.
That's just crazy, incredible good.
Well, Marshall, when you saw that, you were 6 or 7, right? When Empire came out?
Let's see. No, when Empire came out, I was 13. It was in 83, right?
It was 80.
So I was 10 years old. Yeah, 83 is Return of the Jedi. Yeah.
To be a 10-year-old and have watched children's entertainment all your life, had you ever seen the main character, your main hero, take a beating like that?
God.
Because, I mean, Luke gets one hit in the whole 10-minute fight, and the rest of the time he is just battered and beaten and humiliated and he never has the upper hand. Vader fights with one hand,
right,
while Luke is swinging with all of his might. To me, that's just another one of the reasons why that movie is so amazing, is that why would you do that to your hero? Why would you do that to the idol of millions of children? It takes so much courage, and it's just, wow, that you can say, hey, this is going to be a really dark story, kids, but I think you're tough enough to make it through.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely. I mean, I kept waiting for, okay, when's Luke going to gain the upper hand, or when's he going to catch a break or do something surprising and surprise Vader? But I mean, yeah, he just keeps getting beat. And then the revelation that Darth Vader is his father, I mean, that just kills all of his psyche as well.
Yeah.
And then he goes down the tube, you know, just keeps getting beat on, and he's hanging off the end of the city there. I couldn't believe it was ending when it ended, you know, and the title goes up. I mean, what? Are you kidding me? You know, I mean, that was pretty incredible. And then you're going to have to wait 3 years to see the resolution of that is pretty brutal.
See, 3 years to a child is so much worse than 3 years is to us now.
Right? Right? Yeah. I mean, that is, you know, especially back then when it wasn't on TV all the time, and it wasn't, you didn't have access to a VCR or your computer or whatever. And sheesh, man. Yeah, that was rough.
All right. So that leads us to the Return of the Jedi. And I don't know if this is going to, I'm going to go first on this one. I don't know if it's going to be the ultimate moment for everybody else too. But again, it's the end with with Luke fighting Darth Vader. And it's the part where he's meditating and trying not to fight and control his emotions or whatever. And then Darth Vader says, "What about sister?"
"You cannot hide forever, Luke."
"I will not fight you."
"Give yourself to the dark side. It is the only way you can save your friend. Yes, your thoughts betray you. Your feelings for them are strong, especially for sister. If you will not turn to the dark side, then perhaps she will."
You know, and then he just goes ballistic and just starts beating on him. You could tell he's releasing all of his hate and fear at Darth Vader. And then when he cuts his arm off, or cuts his hand off, and then he looks at his own hand that was cut off, and it's, you know, it's robotic. And he looks at Darth Vader's, his father's hand, and realizes that he's becoming just like his father. And that's what the Emperor wants. In my mind, I'm hailing back to the cave scene in Empire when he had a dream fight with Darth Vader and it revealed itself to be him. So that, I guess that whole sequence from sister to him turning off his lightsaber was pretty crucial for me. I don't know if I stole everybody else's thunder on that one or not, but.
Yeah, you totally did, man. That's, I wrote down the throne room scene, specifically the "you cannot hide forever, Luke" scene. I just,
oh, right, the very line,
the lighting in that scene where everything is just blue and black except for Vader's lightsaber, and Luke is, you know what, I've seen it a million times, it never occurred to me that he was meditating. I just thought he was like trying to shut off his thoughts so his father couldn't sense them, that he really was hiding, because, you know, he didn't want to kill, he didn't want to be killed. But yeah, Vader pulls the same crap on Luke that the Emperor pulled on him, pushes his buttons. He knows exactly what buttons to push. And he says, "Your thoughts betray you," which is what Luke said to him earlier in the film. I don't know. It's just really, really wonderful. And then, yeah, Luke just gives in completely. And instead of the music being all triumphant, like it has been every time Luke just wails on somebody with a lightsaber, it's sad. You get this chorus of angels going, "Oh!"
like Nordic doom, you know, it's the end. Yeah, it's so, and I love that music and that scene too, because it's not the uplifting music that you think it's going to be, you know, it's mournful and really, really good.
So that's yours too, Dave?
Specifically for me, the part that I remember, because that's that movie I actually remember seeing. And when the Emperor steps forward and starts electrocuting Luke.
Now, young Skywalker, you will die.
I guess as a six-year-old, I just, you know, as a three-year-old, I could watch him get beaten and maimed and everything, and it was great. But as a six-year-old, seeing him get zapped like that, I was like, oh, I can't watch it anymore. It's too much. And I just, you know, turned my head away, and my dad was sitting there next to me. He's like, look, I think Darth Vader's going to save him. And I'm like, what, are you crazy? There's no way Darth Vader's going to save Luke Skywalker. He's evil. There's no way. And then Vader comes in and lifts up the Emperor and throws him down the very big hole that happens to be there. I think that whole throne room scene impacted me a lot, but Vader coming to Luke's defense and kind of redeeming himself to a degree is pretty powerful. So, sucker for redemption.
That was the first time we'd ever seen Force Lightning, right? I mean, that was a huge reveal just right there. You know, you think it's over, you know, when the Emperor says, so be it. And you're like, all right, Luke's won, you know, it's over. But then he just, now you will die, you know. So that was pretty good.
And did you guys feel like a little bit ripped off when they did the Force Jedi and clones? I mean.
And he just caught it with his lightsaber?
Yeah. And you're like, wow, this, like, now that's not as cool as it was. I don't know. It just, I guess I'm starting to go down a very slippery slope.
Well, they trick us because Palpatine is such an old, decrepit dude, you know, with a cane. He doesn't even stand up. That whole time he's just sitting. And the only thing that he does with the Force is unlock Luke's manacles. And you know, he looks diseased and 1,000 years old. And then he's more powerful than Vader. That kind of thing was like a slap as a child. There's like, no, but he's a little man and he's old. And I'm sure that's what they were aiming for, is to give us the least intimidating. I mean, he was intimidating, but not physically. In the same way that Yoda was not physically impressive, but he was powerful, this guy was at death's door, or maybe he had been 10 years ago.
He wasn't the menace that Darth Vader was, at least not. At least he didn't seem to be.
Anyway, I just that moment is really impressive to me, because like you said, Marshall, Luke won. He beat the dark side and he didn't give in, and the Emperor had failed, but the Emperor still had that last trick up his sleeve.
Well, I think last thoughts overall. Anything you'd like to add, Dave?
You know, I don't know if it's when I saw them or not, or, you know, the age that I was, but they're still some of the most mythic storytelling that I've ever seen. So now I'm doing Podcastle and everything, and you guys are doing your podcasts, and like, I understand a little bit more about, you know, the different genres and stuff. And I think because of Star Wars, I've always been one of those people where I'm like, the weirder and the less lines in the genre, the better. If it bleeds over, if there's fantasy and horror and, you know, weirdness and science fiction all bleeding into this one thing, that's what I like. That's my favorite kind of story. And I think that a lot of that is due to Star Wars being its very own unique thing. I hope that the new movies are cool. I hope that they don't suck and that they somehow are able to capture that excitement and that weirdness that they have.
Yeah, I think we'll be entertained regardless, but I am hoping to be inspired as well by these new movies, as I was with the original trilogy. Rish, any last words?
Oh, well, of course. I am so jealous of the two of you to have kids that you can take to these new movies, the sequels or the spinoffs or whatever they happen to be, but also just to be able to sit down with your kids when they're ready and experience it through their eyes. I have nephews, and I guess I'll do that with them. But when Star Wars was re-released in 97, that was the very first time I saw it on the big screen. And we went, and there's that moment when 3PO in the desert says, "Go that way, you'll be malfunctioning within a day, you nearsighted scrap heap or pile," or, you know, the droid equivalent of the F word. And he kicks him, and this little, like, 4 or 5 year old kid a couple rows up just started to laugh. And the entire audience laughed at this boy laughing. That had never been funny to me, ever, that 3PO would kick R2. But it was to this kid, and suddenly we were all kids. And that, I mean, I'm hoping that these new movies will make me feel like a kid again. I always have the original trilogy to make me feel like a kid. So, you know, even if they were awful, I've still got those other three. But yeah, I am jealous listening to you guys talk about your kids and just finding out what they like and what they respond to and what maybe they're not old enough to pick up on. All that stuff, just wow, that's exciting.
Star Wars definitely brings out the child in all of us, that's for sure.
It's hard not to have fun and get excited about it. We live pretty close to Disneyland, and so, you know, we go there pretty frequently, and my daughter loves the Star Tours ride there. My son is terrified of the Darth Vader versus the little tiny kids Padawan trip, which is like the worst thing ever. Like, you know, they have this Jedi Academy training thing where Darth Vader shows up to fight the younglings, and I'm like, did anybody at Disneyland see Revenge of the Sith? I mean, this is not a good idea. Like, what's going to happen here? So my son is just absolutely terrified of that. But I love how Star Wars has become like this. It's just bled into so many different parts of our culture. And I mean, they have these t-shirts now of like Darth Vader and stormtroopers riding around on the carousel at Star Wars at Disneyland, or the Dumbo and stuff. And I don't know. It just makes me smile every time I see it. So I love that Star Wars does that to us still.
I think that's a good note to end on. So,
yeah.
Thanks, Dave, for joining us here. We'll probably have you come back sometime.
Hey, man, I'd love it. I had a great time, and thanks for having me. And, Rish, it was really good to actually talk to you finally. Thanks for everything you've done for us, and really, really appreciate it.
Oh, hey, my pleasure, man. I ought to have you do a voice sometime if you're amenable.
I'm here for you whenever you need me.
Well, that'll wrap it up for us today here on our first podcast. But you can find our podcast, the main podcast blog site will be delusionsofgrandeurpodcast.blogspot.com. So let me spell that for you. That's delusionsofgrandeurpodcast.blogspot.com. Yeah, I know it's long, but I didn't want to abbreviate it to DOG. I didn't want it to be the dog podcast. And Delusions of Grandeur without the podcast was already taken. So there you have it. Delusionsofgrandeurpodcast.blogspot.com. Same thing for the email. It's delusionsofgrandeurpodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you with suggestions for topics you'd like to talk about or questions that you have for Rish or I. Anything that's on your mind there. We are going to have forums. I had some problems setting it up, but I believe the forums will be, again, delusionsofgrandeurpodcast.freeforums.org, just to keep it consistent. Eventually, we'll be set up probably on Facebook and Twitter as well. We'll let you know about that. And we'll see you in about a month, you think?
Cool.
Rish, never tell me the odds.
All right, well, get in there, Marshall. I don't care what you smell. You got one, Dave?
You need to go home and rethink your life.
The Death Sticks guy, right?
The Delusions of Grandeur podcast is produced under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives license. Feel free to share it, but do not change it or sell it.